let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. The highly praised science fiction adventure novel Pangea, Book 1, Enforcer's Pursuit by Cameron Merton, begins the tale of a boy with a lost past, whose escape triggers events that may forever change the world and his destiny. Earth is a memory, and humans have settled on several planets unified under the Earth Colony Federation. On the colony Pangea, the law enforcers imprison all criminals, age notwithstanding. Condemned youth on Pangea quickly learn they have no rights and almost no memory. In the boys' prison, 12-year-old Mark retains a feeling that he was not guilty, a hope that keeps him alive. Escaping the enforcers, he must keep ahead of them as he attempts to uncover his past and discover his innocence. Cameron Burton knew from a very young age he was destined to be a writer. Busy always writing for various online audio productions, working on his novels, illustrating comics, and acting as the humble servant to two cats and a dog, Cameron lives in Washington State. Pangea is his first book, many more planned. Praised for his unique imagination and intriguing plotline, Cameron Burton, author of Pangea, Book 1, Enforcer's Pursuit, our guest on This Week in America. Hi, Cameron. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you found time with all you've got going on. There's such a busy lifestyle you've got, so creative, doing such an excellent job with all phases that you're involved in, especially writing. Talking about this first book, the first book is Pangea. Talk a little bit about the inspiration for this story and what the journey was like in writing this. I'm sure you could probably write a whole book talking about what happened as you're writing your first book.
Ooh, well, where to begin? It was actually quite a long journey from its original idea to the final format. And in some ways, it almost did not happen. It actually started when I was in high school, believe it or not. It was a creative writing assignment, and the teacher displayed a print of a painting one day in the class. It was a view of Toledo by El Greco. And it's a beautiful painting. I loved it. Anyway, the teacher instructed the class that he wanted everyone to study the painting for a bit and write the beginning of a story which included its scene in some way. And his biggest stipulation was that he did not want any once-upon-a-time fairy tale stories.
Interesting, yes.
And not many students adhered to that guideline. Anyway, though, well, since I grew up as a science fiction lover, that type of setting was naturally the first thing to pop into my head. And what I wrote surprised me because it was refreshingly original. Until that point, my writing had largely consisted of really bad fan fiction.
So this really unleashed it for you. The creative juices were flowing at that point. And that's interesting. So often we sat through those classes thinking this is a colossal waste of time. That was actually a building block for you then, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And, you know, when I got the assignment back, and I was only one of two students who got top marks in that assignment, by the way.
Fantastic, fantastic.
Yeah, but, you know, I kept coming back to it, you know, after I got the assignment back. It just kept drawing my focus because, you know, it was something new, it was something original. And I decided that I wanted to see where this new idea was going to go. So I got myself a small notebook and started writing out the first draft longhand. Because at that time, carrying computers everywhere wasn't yet a thing. I mean, this was the mid-90s, and the internet was still relatively in its infancy.
So the notebook, the old legal pad, helped you get this whole process started here. You know, it's interesting. The finished product, by the way, is the book Pangea, Book 1, Enforcer's Pursuit by Cameron Burton. Now, if you're looking for the book, you'll find it, of course, Amazon, the usual places. Pangea is Pangea, and Cameron is Cameron Burton, Burton. Book available, again, Amazon, the usual places. Cameron, let's go back and pick up the story. Sort of the challenges in getting this book together. This story had been in the back of your mind, obviously, for a long time.
Yeah, it was. And, well, let's see. I finished the first notebook, and, you know, I marked it as a cliffhanger and asked my friends to read it, as well as the teacher who gave the original assignment. And they were impressed with the originality that went into the story. They said they had never read anything like it. So, well, since the story wasn't done, I got some more notebooks, which I ended up filling and turning into a trilogy. And I originally called the series YMCF, after the place that Mark escapes from. But whenever I mentioned the series title, people would start imitating the village people.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay. I can understand that. So you wanted to make that change. You wanted to make that distinction right up front.
Yeah, that's why I changed the series title to Pangaea.
And that's P-A-N-G-A-E-A. I'll spell that several times. So if you're Googling it, trying to get information and purchase the book, you'll know exactly what to look for. And there's, of course, a link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Talk about the writing process for this, what you go through. Some people like to have their little area and it's totally quiet. Nobody bothers them. Other people like to have their little area, but the music going. Do you have like a particular, a favorite process you like to go through, a format you go through when you're writing?
When I write, I do better when I have some kind of music going. Among my favorites, I would have to say I really enjoy listening to my favorite musical productions or the soundtracks to certain musicals that I like. Les Miserables, Phantom of the Opera, Love Never Dies. But if I'm in the mood for instrumental, then I really like listening to movie scores.
Interesting. So that's sort of inspiration for you that keeps you focused and gets you in the zone to write. Speaking of in the zone, everybody talks about writer's block, and I'm always interested in the opposite of that. What happens when you really are in the zone? You've got life and you've got a lot of things you need to do, and you really could stay up all night and keep writing, and you really don't want to stop because you're on a roll. Do you ever get into that particular zone?
Oh, yeah, I have on occasion. I once did a 3-day writing binge.
A 3-day zone. I like that. But I would just think when the ideas are coming, you don't want to shut the faucet off. You want to, you know, try to prime it and get as much as you're going to. Let's talk a little bit about in terms of the book. You've got a background in audio that I mentioned. Are you going to be looking at audiobooks? Are you going to do something like that with the Pangaea series?
Actually, the audiobook for the first Pangaea book novel has already been recorded.
Oh,
I did the reading. And a friend of mine, John Harding, he's in a band, and he has a professional recording studio set up in his basement. So he let me use his equipment to do the recording, and he did the mastering of the files, and you know, that was actually a lot of fun to do. It took us, 7-8 weeks, maybe something like that. But the real challenging was the editing afterward, which I also did myself, and that was a bear. Because, you know, with audiobooks, the pacing for everything has to be just right. And the other tricky part was learning to remove any unwanted sounds of heavy breathing, as I didn't want for the audiobook to sound like an obscene phone call.
Yeah, that's always bad. It's always best if you can clean that up. I can imagine when you think about it, it's more than just going in a closet somewhere for a couple of hours and reading the book. There's a lot that goes in. It's a production in itself, isn't it?
It is. It's very demanding work. And I'll tell you, I gained a lot of respect for people who work as audio engineers. It is not an easy job.
When you go in there and you're recording your book, you've got advantages because it's your book, so you're not worried about somebody that doesn't fully understand exactly the mood that you're setting in the book. But on the other hand, as you go in and you read it, are there points when you read the book and you go, yeah, that's really good, Cameron, you did a nice job, or areas where it's like sort of second guessing yourself where you went with this? Any reflections on that as you're reading your book out loud?
Not really. Not really, because I had a number of beta readers to help me review the final product.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, they were invaluable in helping me decide what I wanted to keep, what I wanted to discard. And so, you know, the real challenge with recording the audiobook was making sure that it all flowed correctly. And especially with the voices, because I do voices in the book, for the various characters.
Interesting.
So maintaining consistency, that was a challenge. But it was a fun one.
Well, it sounds like it, and I can add voice actor to your resume of talents that you have. Cameron Burton is our guest. Cameron is C-A-M-R-E-N. The book is Pangea. This is book one, Enforcer's Pursuit. Let's talk about, I mentioned Amazon because that's the easy one to go to. Everybody can remember Amazon because I get books there. Where's the best place to buy Pangea, and where are the audiobooks available as well?
The audiobook is not out yet. It's in the final processing.
Okay.
It will be up hopefully within a few weeks, but the book itself now is available to purchase through Amazon, obviously, and Barnes & Noble's website, as well as through my publisher's online bookstore, and that's www.iuniverse.com.
That's perfect, and we'll have all of that up on our website. And by the way, marketing by Global Summit House, a publishing and marketing company that caters to the author's needs, that Global Summit House, one of the partners with Cameron in getting this book out there and word of this book out into the public. What were some of the key challenges you faced in writing this book once you started the process? Did it go like you thought it was going to, or were there a little few twists and turns along the way in the process of getting this written and then published?
Well, actually, there was a time along the way when I was actually giving up on it. You know, by the mid-2000s, it didn't seem ready, and I put them away for a few years, and that's when I started working with these online Star Trek fan production groups, and I think some of the scripts that I wrote and consulted on did okay. I was proud of them as first releases. They were pretty cool. But then I met my future wife, Chris, and I told her about the books, and she asked to read them. So I gave her printout copies, and after she finished them, she came to me and said, "You have got to get these out." So with her encouragement and support, I started working on them again. And since the setting is primarily science fiction, but it's not focused on things like advanced technology or aliens, because I think most sci-fi has covered that pretty well. But I had a great deal to study about the crime drama element because of Mark's plot line and the legal issues involved with it. And you know what? I've always liked coming-of-age stories, too. So even though these three elements may seem like an unusual mix, Pangea seemed to work really well with all of them together.
Yeah, it fits in several genres. Science fiction that you mentioned, the coming of age, it certainly fits in there. A crime drama. There's such a gripping story that you have in this. And Cameron is, again, noted for his intriguing plot lines, which he has in this particular story. You mentioned Mark. Is there a favorite character you have in Pangea?
Oh, that's a poser, because there are things I like in most of the characters.
Yes, yes.
Mark, you know, for example, you know, he's a consummate survivor. I mean, even though he has literally lost everything and been through things that can break many people, he has never given in to despair and instead works to find ways to improve his lot. And he has an inner strength that I find most admirable. And I'll admit, there are sometimes I have a hard time seeing that strength in myself, but I'm hardly alone in that. There are many people who have that same difficulty, and this is not a failing, despite what their inner voices may think.
Well, there's so many messages that you have as you're reading Pangea, and let's talk about that. Do you have a particular theme or message, and what do you hope the readers take away from the story? Again, it's a very entertaining story, well told, but there's another layer to that that gets you thinking. What do you hope the takeaway is for the reader?
Well, I'm hoping that they come away with a better awareness of certain aspects of reality, even in this day and age. I mean, in particular, that no matter how much people think that those things can never happen to them, you know, absolute guarantees against things like predation or abuse are absolutely impossible. And anyone who thinks otherwise, I believe, would have to be self-deluded in some way, even if they don't realize it. When such events happen, though, the person or persons who have gone through it often blame themselves for not being strong enough or tough enough to prevent it from happening. And as a society, we've unfortunately tended to blame the victim. And it's a form of social bullying which has led so many to depression, drugs, or even suicide because the world tells them they failed. And one thing that I've learned is that this stigma is particularly strong among boys and men, because our society has for millennia preached that boys don't cry, guys are tough, and other such stereotypical messages. But, you know, with our attitudes toward gender equality evolving so drastically over the past 100 years, it's my personal opinion that this stigma needs to be eliminated. And I believe that the blame for such things should be placed on the instigators, not the victims or survivors.
Yes, totally agree. And that's a powerful message that you have within the storyline of Pangea. Boy, time is quickly running out here. I want to talk about the trilogy when the others will be up. And I can visualize this story. Have you thought about this being a motion picture and who you might pick if they said, Cameron, budget's unlimited, who would you like to see star in the motion picture version of Pangea?
Well, I'll be honest. I've always had that as a pipe dream. Back when I started the story, I imagined Kevin Bacon as the villain Carl Burke, because he played a very similar character in the movie Sleepers. You know, and yes. So, yeah. And, well, lately I've kind of been seeing Jesse Spencer from House and Chicago Fire as Walt Hinton, for example.
Interesting.
And I keep a loose eye on the young actors' scenes for potentials to fill the roles. And there are some out there right now who I think would be awesome as Mark and Randy and Wesley and even some of the lesser boys like Brent and Vincent. But I don't know if I should name them here. I don't want to freak anybody out.
Well, hopefully.
I've considered contacting them for permission to use renders of them for the cover art on the second book, but I'm not sure how they'd react.
Well, you never know unless you contact them. The worst they can say is, no, don't do it. And you're not going to do it now probably anyway. So this is, I mean, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained type of thing. I would love to see you do that and get them interested in the storyline and the possibilities here, because that's not just you and a few people promoting the idea of Pangea for the big screen, but you've got maybe the actors involved in the process as well. Let's talk about the future. This is a trilogy. Talk about how are we going to see these characters develop and how will they develop over the sequel? Are you working on books 2 and 3 now?
Actually, the first draft of the second book is done. I am working on the revisions to it, cutting the fat, adding in more sensory details and scenic details, because with the first draft, I usually focus on the dialogue, the series of events, and so forth. But now that's all set, so it's time to go in and add the sensory details. That's where I am with the second book right now.
And the third is still sort of formulating in the back of your mind?
Largely, it's already written. I've got the older drafts, and I use them as a step-off point.
Interesting.
But go ahead.
So you still have the notebooks. You didn't throw any notebooks away. You still have those
for
reference.
No. I still have them.
them. That's a good thing, and that's a lesson for aspiring writers out there. If you write something years ago and think, I'll never use this again, hang on to it. It takes up a little storage space, but someday you may want to go back and tap into that. That's interesting. We are doing, of course, a video version of this that's on our YouTube channel. You find it on YouTube. You'll go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, click on videos, and you'll see the interview with Cameron. A minute or so left here at the end. Talk about the background. This is interesting because this is a nice little production you've got on your end with Skype here. Talk about the background that you're using on the video.
Well, the background is originally a Star Wars backdrop, obviously. It's Coruscant. But you'll notice the Space Needle right here next to me. And that's because on one of the other Earth colonies in the book, there's a gigantic city. It's like 15 times the size of New York, but it is New Seattle, and they have the Space Needle situated there. It was brought there from the wreckage of Earth, along with other landmarks that have been spread throughout the Earth Colony Federation.
Well, you've done such a...
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you do such a nice job, and this is just sort of complements the visual part of it in with the TV interview in getting a glimpse of what's behind you there. It's no wonder the book is highly praised. It's the science fiction adventure novel, Pangea, from Cameron Burton. This is book one, Enforcer's Pursuit. I'm going to spell everything for you. Pangea is Pangea, book one, Enforcer's Pursuit. Cameron, Cameren. You'll find the book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual places. Like, on, go to our website and take you right there, get information and able to order the book as well. Cameron, this has been fun. Congratulations on the success of book one. Looking forward to books two and three. Hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about those as well. Thank you for spending some time with us on the program today.
Enjoyed it. And just one quick little addition note.
Sure.
It's not just a trilogy. I have plans for up to at least six books.
Interesting. Okay. That will be when you're reading the book and you're thinking, okay, I've got one more and they're going to finish off these characters. Not so fast. You've got a few more coming on there. This is a trilogy plus that we're talking about with Pangea.
Exactly.
Again, Pangea, book one, Enforcer's Pursuit. Cameron Burton, our guest on the program. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.